This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Lead pass for JT Compher. Partial break. He marches in. Compher, a shot. He scores. JT Compher cut in front. Got around the last line of defense for Winnipeg. It's a shorthanded goal for Colorado. And they regain their two-goal lead.
From Thursday night, our buddy Paul Edmonds with the call. The Colorado Avalanche went on to defeat the Winnipeg Jets by a 4-1 margin. A very important win for the Avalanche as they try and get back into the playoff race. Bit of a disappointing loss for the Winnipeg Jets on home ice. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets game day. Later on tonight, the Jets and the Ottawa Senators. For the second time in 7 days, the Jets look for revenge on the Senators after their humbling defeat last Saturday afternoon in the nation's capital. Alongside Dave Manuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The best way to reach us here in studio via Twitter, at Illegal Curve. We want to hear from you throughout the show, whatever's on your mind with regard to the Winnipeg Jets, with regard to the NHL. If we like what we read, we might even mention it on air and give you the according shout-out. I say good morning to Ezzy. Good morning to Dave, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Jets have played 4 games since we last joined you last Saturday, and I would suggest that it's been a pretty average week for the Winnipeg Jets. 2 wins, 2 losses. But when you look at who their opponents were, 4 teams that are currently out of the playoff race, I would say it's even a disappointing week for the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, it definitely hasn't been a banner week, guys. And, you know, when you talk about, you know, those 3 losses in a row, that's just something we haven't seen this year. And, you know, the game against the Buffalo Sabres, It saved that road trip. I mean, it really could have been a disaster, and they end up pulling out that win. Josh Morrissey makes the beautiful pass to Blake Wheeler, and they win it 3-2-1, sorry. And, you know, when you talk about the game against the Rangers, sure, the Jets fell asleep in that second period, but they managed to find a way to win, right? And, you know, they've scored goals in bunches before. They did it against the Rangers. But that game against the Avalanche bothered me for a few reasons, just because of where Colorado is in the standings, how they've been playing, and the fact that I think the Jets really have struggled to put together a full 60-minute effort. Because when you talk about that win over Buffalo, or you talk about that win over the Rangers, I don't think Paul Maurice or the Jets coaching staff or any of the players are going to say that those were, you know, grade A games. I mean, those were against teams that are clearly worse than you. I mean, the Sabres are a mess right now. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you watched them last night, but they're a complete mess. Goaltending is not good. And we've got Marty Biron coming up at 10:30 today, and we're going to talk to him about the Sabres. But the Sabres are a mess. That's a team that I thought that the Jets should have beat. And I
they
and,
lost. Sorry, sorry they, to they, your they, point, they lost 6-2 on home ice last night to the Rangers.
Right, and it was a one-goal game in the third period, and then it just all fell apart. And the Jets did beat the Sabres. What I meant was I thought that the Jets should have beat them in more of a commanding fashion. I mean, it shouldn't have come down to, you know, scoring a goal late in the third period. And granted, the Jets were in the second game of a back-to-back.
So were the Sabres.
Well, yeah, sure.
Without travel, yeah, but they were.
Sure, and it was a sluggish game. I mean, both teams, especially in the latter stages of that game, both of those teams were tired. I get it. But when you're talking about the Jets coming off of that disappointing game against Ottawa, a game in which I actually think they played much better than in the game against the Montreal Canadiens, I just thought I was expecting more of a pushback from the Jets in that game. But then against the Rangers, I also thought that at times in that game, you know, the Jets let the Rangers obviously get back into the game, but I just didn't think that they were playing that way that we've been accustomed to over the last couple of years. So, yes, you know, it's just one game. The Jets are still first in the Central. They're still tied for first in the West right now. But I thought that was a really disappointing game. And, you know, I thought Connor Hellebuck was really solid. It's not on Hellebuck. He's been arguably, you know, the Jets' best player over the last few weeks. It's just really been, you know, a group effort. And in that game against Colorado, Dave, I just didn't think that Paul Maurice had one line that he could really depend on. I mean, it just seemed like every single line was off that night.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's any question that it wasn't the Jets' night. I think Colorado was the hungrier of the two teams. I was looking back to the previous time the Jets had played the Avalanche back in early January when I think it was game 42 for the Jets and game 43 for the Avs. Mm-hmm. And the Jets were in second place, the Avs were in third place, and they were separated by 6 points. And then at going into Thursday night's game, they were separated by 20 points. And the Jets hadn't been playing hockey that you would call like
dynamic
or anything significant. So we knew the Jets weren't – they were winning games, but they weren't like – their record wasn't like they went on a crazy run. Mm-hmm. It just goes to show you how bad Colorado had played of late. And I thought Colorado looked like the faster team. I think they looked like the hungrier team. And
certainly the more desperate team, as you would expect.
Yeah, and I thought
their place in the standings.
And I thought their top line was fantastic throughout the night. I thought that they were, you know, generating a lot of opportunities. You know, I think the Jets got lucky that I thought Byfuglien in that second period when he got tied up with Mikko Rantanen, that that could have looked – it didn't look good for him because he looked a little bit sore when he was – you know, they kind of
– wincing on the bench.
Well, they got tangled up, and mm-hmm. then, yeah, you saw him go to the bench, and sure enough, you know, he came out and took his next couple of shifts, and I wasn't sure if he was going to come back for the third. Came back for the third. So, I mean, that's a good sign for the Jets because they can't afford to lose Dustin Byfuglien right now. You know, Joe Morrow has that questionable fight with Matt Calvert, good old Brandon boy.
Mm-hmm. Late in the game.
Yeah, I mean,
meaningless
it was,
at that point.
It was beyond meaningless. And I looked at the hit, and I didn't think the hit there was anything that generated that sort of, you know, it wasn't like, I guess the way I look at it is like if you're playing Colorado the next game or a week, you know, within a day or so. I know they don't play, I think they play Colorado in 2 weeks.
No, they play Colorado on Wednesday night.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So six days between games, the two teams.
I don't know. Like, I just didn't think it was, you know, it merited that sort of response by Joe Morrow. I can understand the frustration, but I mean, it's a 4-1 game at that point, you know, and just kind of ended it there. And then look what ends up happening. Now you're out 2 to 3 weeks. Sammy Niku has to get recalled because you're, and unfortunately for the Jets, it's not a good thing because we know Paul Maurice right now isn't playing Sammy Niku, especially with, you know, Dmitry Kulikov healthy again. So you've got Sammy Niku who, as I, you know, and I actually thought Tucker Poolman, who's been playing exceptionally well with the Moose, would get the recall because he could probably afford to have a few nights off. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't be the end of, you know, he's played a lot of hockey right now consistently for him. And Sammy Niku, on the other hand, has played 6 games with the Jets and 3 games with the Moose. Since January 1st. So that's 9 games total. It's not a lot of hockey for a young player.
Well, and, you know, speaking of not a lot of hockey, Dave, you know, there's a lot of chatter about, you know, there's 7 games here in 12 days. But when I look at that, and, you know, the Jets have had, I think, when you talk, and I know Scott Billick, good friend of the show, has been talking about this quite a bit in the scrums. I mean, the Jets' strength of schedule is actually pretty good. So when you're talking about,
it's,
you know,
good right now. They have the second hardest schedule left once the month of March hits. They have the second hardest schedule left in the entire NHL.
Right, but I'm talking about now, right?
Right, like, now they're in a span of playing 6 games against non-playoff teams.
Right, and you know, when you factor in the travel and all of that, sure, you had a back-to-back against Ottawa and Montreal, but that you're talking about...
Ottawa to Buffalo is not travel.
Oh, sorry, Ottawa to Buffalo. Montreal mm-hmm. was before that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're not talking about going from, you know, Chicago to Nashville.
No.
Or something like that, right?
Talking an hour.
So when you're talking about 7 games in 12 days, yes, it's a lot of hockey. The Jets are playing every second day, right? And then you've got a little bit of a break after today's game because you have 3 days between the Sens and Colorado. I get that. But when you're talking about, you know, the Sabres, the Senators, the Rangers, the Avalanche, I mean, these aren't hard teams. And that's why I thought, you know, and I imagine, you know, Paul Maurice and the Jets players were also not happy about their effort against the Avalanche, because when you're talking about, you know, some of the disappointing games that have preceded that, I mean, the Sharks game was a disappointing game. The Habs game, I think, was maybe the most disappointing game of the entire year.
Most lopsided.
Right.
They were first time in a long time where they were just run off the ice by a team.
Right. So then you've got the Avalanche coming in, and I get it. The Avalanche are desperate. They mm-hmm. lost 8 in a row. They're trying to stay relevant. They're competing with Minnesota. They're competing with St. Louis for that wild card spot.
Not even competing
I get
with
it.
St. Louis
and give the Avalanche credit, right? And I mean, Tyler Myers, after the game, said this much, and, you know, Adam Lowry also said this much. He said, look, they played better than us. We didn't have it tonight. We just didn't have our legs. They talked about how they weren't skating and all of that, but that doesn't excuse the effort, in my opinion, because I just didn't think that the Jets had enough of a pushback in that game. After JT Compher scores that goal to make it 3-1, the shorty, mm-hmm. the game's over. And, I mean, we've seen the Jets come back from those types of – you know, deficits so many times. And I get it, a shorthanded goal in a low-scoring game that puts you down two goals, that's tough. But I just didn't think there was enough of a pushback, and that's just not something that we're familiar with. We're expecting the Jets to tie these games up. They've done it so many times over the last year and a half,
you
2 years.
You expect to see the response, and there hasn't been the response, and there wasn't the response on Thursday night. And I mean, like I said, you know, they've played four games in this week since last Saturday, and they played four games where you would expect them to win those four games, and they've only won two of them. They were playing four teams that were out of the playoff race, and sure, Colorado is, you know, still on the fringes of the playoff race, and Colorado can be a playoff team if they get average goaltending, which they got. Well, they got above average goaltending on Thursday night against the Jets, but you know, they just seem like they're going through the motions right now.
Well, you know, and to me, the interesting thing was the fact that you had a 2-0 game for Colorado, and Colorado had all the momentum. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, Brandon Tanev scores a pretty bad goal on Varlamov to make it 2-1 seconds after the Avs had taken the two-goal lead.
Yeah, 26 seconds
So you're sitting there, and you're thinking to yourself, okay, well, here's the opportunity. I mean, this is giving the Jets life in a game they probably don't deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they really weren't able to gain the momentum that they needed. And again, it wasn't one player in particular. It was right across the board. I didn't think that many players had much going on that evening, aside from, as he said, Connor Hellebuck.
Well, the Jets, you can make an argument that I think on Thursday night against the Avs, the Jets' best forward or most dangerous forward was the guy who's getting all the attention on him for negative reasons, Patrick Laine.
Yeah,
Laine was the best version of Laine we've seen in a while.
Well, Semyon Varlamov made two really tough saves on Patrick Laine. Well,
Varlamov and played very well.
Laine was in his sweet spot, and Varlamov has not had a good year.
No, he's been terrible since the middle of December.
And I agree with Dave. The goal that Tanev scored, and I remember Sarah, you know, had him as a walk-off interview on TSN TV, mm-hmm. watching the game at home, and you know, Brandon Tanev said himself, I just put it on net, and it deflected.
That was
a save that Varlamov should make.
Yeah.
But aside from that, Varlamov was perfect.
Varlamov was the difference maker in that game. You mentioned the first time, the last time the Jets and the Avs played, which was at the beginning of January, and there was a 7-4 Jets victory, mm-hmm. where everything the Jets threw at Varlamov went in the net. You know, because that was a game.
No, Grubauer was in net.
Was it Grubauer that game? Okay, well, then it was Grubauer in that game. But you remember that was a game where the Jets had a 5-2 lead.
Yep.
The Avs came back and made it 5-4. And then I think it was basically a goal that the Jets scored from almost behind the goalie from the goal line. That another terrible goal that made it 6-4. That was the backbreaker. Because the Avalanche, I mean, Rantanen, MacKinnon, and Landeskog are dangerous every night. They're always a threat, but the Avs haven't been able to get any goaltending. Well, they get average to above average goaltending on Thursday night, and look what happens. And now it's not saying, you know, the Jets weren't good on Thursday night.
Right.
So it's not as simple as saying the Avs are going to win every game, you know, when they get average goaltending.
If the Jets and the Avalanche meet in the playoffs, I would take the Jets in five games.
Well, sure. I mean, I think nobody thinks that the Avalanche are as good as the Jets. They don't have the secondary scoring. They don't have the goaltending.
I think the Jets just didn't play well. I really think it's as simple as that. I really believe sometimes, and you look at the Jets' record at home, guys, we haven't even touched on it. This is the Jets' first loss of 2019 at home.
Mm-hmm.
It's mid-February. it's one loss at home in a month.
Regulation
and a half.
Loss. I mean, they lost to the Sharks in overtime, but regulation
right,
loss.
Right,
that's
what I meant. Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, it was a bad night on Thursday night. This hasn't been a great stretch for the Jets. It seems like it's, I don't know if it's apathy, I don't know if it's boredom, but I think they want to get into meaningful games. And that's going to probably happen, I think. You know, meaningful games happen before the playoffs start. I think after the trade deadline, when their schedule gets harder, and you look at their schedule in March, where they're playing, I think the majority of their games are against teams that are currently in playoff positions. They have the Lightning. They have the Capitals on the road. They got Nashville at home. Meaningful games stretching up to the playoffs, I think, is when you're going to see this team sort of throw off their malaise and get going and get back to being really invested in a lot of these games, as opposed to going through the motions we've seen for the past week or so.
Yeah, Drew, they've got the Nashville Predators twice. You mentioned that they've got the Capitals, the Lightning. You've got the Vegas Golden Knights. You've got the Habs again. So March will be a tough month, and I think there is something to what you're talking about with, you know, a bit of a malaise happening with the Jets right now, as Paul Maurice likes to say. This is a part of the schedule where, you know, the Jets have found some trouble beating some teams that they should definitely beat. And when you're talking about the Ottawa Senators, mm-hmm. even though I really do believe the score flattered the Senators last weekend, this is a game that you have to think that the Jets are going to get up for, and they're going to put some pucks behind whoever's in net for the Senators.
Well, we will talk about the Jets and the Senators throughout the program, but when we return, it's trade deadline conversation time. Darren Dreger says the Jets are more interested in a top six winger than they are a centerman. What are your thoughts on that? We talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. A lot of chatter coming in via Twitter. Keep sending it in at Illegal Curve. We'll try to get to it throughout the program. Of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Winnipeg Free Press, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Mike McIntyre. Mike, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, always good to do it, guys.
Mike, we were just having a spirited conversation about Mark Stone, because that's obviously the name that is front and center in everybody's mind.
I don't know if you've heard of him, Mike. He plays for the Ottawa Senators. Yeah.
Sitting here,
yeah,
you know,
name,
not
name rings a bell.
Yeah, exactly. You know, in passing, you may have heard his name once or twice.
Sure.
Sitting here, you know, 9 days ahead of the trade deadline, and all the talk now is shifting to the Jets, apparently desiring a top six winger as opposed to a top six centerman. You know, how much is too much to get a guy like Mark Stone? Are you comfortable giving up a player off your active roster, the names being Roslovic, Appleton? Are those guys, in your mind, untouchable?
I would say they're untouchable unless you figure you're somehow going to sign Mark Stone beyond this season. And I don't see how you can do that financially unless the player you're giving up is a fairly big salary, like a la a Nikolai Ehlers or a Brian Little, I guess, or a Matthew Perreault. I mean, you'd need to move so much money out, not this year, but down the road. And I think if you're going to give up an elite sort of top-level prospect, you need to have some security that Mark Stone is more than just a rental if you're moving something like that out. So, I mean, I don't know if the Jets would be confident in doing that. I'm sure Mark Stone would consider Winnipeg as a destination. Obviously, he's got some real ties to this community being from here. But, you know, I think that would be a risky proposition. And I think at the end of the day, I mean, if you're trying to make your team as strong as possible for a playoff run, taking something away from the current roster is, as I say, a very risky proposition. And, you know, whether it's a Roslovic or an Appleton, I'm sure those are players the Senators would be very interested in. I just think that, you know, that has the potential to backfire. Especially if the player doesn't ultimately sign here beyond this season. And then, you know, you sort of are left going, well, what did we just do there? Especially if you don't go all the way and win the cup, you might feel like it was something that you shouldn't have done. Buyer's remorse.
Yo, Mike, we're 58 games into the season, and, you know, we've all watched the Jets now on a nightly basis, and, you know, just continuing the trade deadline talk because it's coming up in 9 days, and that seems to be the only thing people want to talk about these days. But, you know, the Jets have obviously, you know, hit the skids a little bit here, you know, losing the three games in a row in Montreal, Ottawa, and then at home against San Jose, and then they get the wins against Buffalo and the Rangers, but they've lost four of their last six games here. And when you talk about where the Jets are in the standings, obviously they're first place and, you know, they're doing pretty well. We know they're going to finish first or second in the Central, but there's obviously something wrong with this team right now. And we were talking about it, you know, last segment, you know, should the Jets go after a winger? Should they go after a centerman, left side defense? I mean, knowing where the Jets are at right now, what position do you think the Jets need to address prior to the trade deadline? If there is just one position?
Yeah, I mean, their play, of course, is inspiring a whole lot of confidence. I don't know that it's anything to worry about too much, because I think part of what the Jets are going through here is, you know, like the dog days, if you will, of the season a bit, where they know that, you know, they're pretty much home and cooled when it comes to a playoff spot. They know they're probably getting home ice advantage, although you'd like to think that finishing first would be a significant kind of motivation for the Jets, not just in the Central. I would think finishing first in the Western Conference ought to be a pretty good incentive as well. But, you know, I think with this Jets team, obviously they're getting Nikolaj Ehlers back in a couple of weeks, and he's a pretty, he can be a pretty dynamic top six winger as well, and it's almost going to feel like a free agent addition because, you know, he's been out of the lineup obviously since the very beginning of January. So when you're missing a player for almost 2 months, and he starts in, if he can pick up kind of where he left off, the Jets are getting a real boost. You know, I still think on the blue line, and we're seeing it, guys, all the time, right? Like, they just can't get fully healthy. Now it's Joe Morrow who's out. Dmitry Kulikov comes back in. Just as, you know, Josh Morrissey went down when Dustin Byfuglien came back, and then Kulikov went down. So I think you can never have too much depth. I'm not sure a top four defenseman, though, is what's on the radar. But, I mean, I would still be looking out there, and if you could improve your blue line and get someone who might be able to be a match, say with Dustin Byfuglien on that left side in the top four, to me that would be right up there. I think these Jets can score. I don't have many concerns about their ability to score goals. I think the more help you can get in trying to keep pucks out of your own net and improve defensively, the better. So we certainly hear a lot of talk about Stone and Duchesne and Kevin Hayes, guys like that. We're not hearing much chatter, though, about defensemen, not since Jake Muzzin went to the Leafs, and yet I still think a defenseman should be high on the priority list.
Well, Mike, something that's probably high on the Jets' priority list is getting their power play fired up, and you have a column out in the Winnipeg Free Press about that. So what have you noticed with regards to the Jets' power play, and how are they going to get this back on track?
You know, I've noticed it's just so predictable, especially that top unit, and yet, I guess predictable doesn't always have to be a bad thing. Adam Lally actually had some interesting thoughts about that yesterday. I asked him, is a predictable power play, you know, a bad power play? And he said, well, there are teams out there, and he cited Tampa Bay and Washington as two of them that are very predictable in what they do and continue to be effective. So, but I just see the Jets being very slow now on the way they move the puck. They're looking for the same thing all the time, and the other teams obviously have done their homework and know what the Jets are going to try and do, especially with Blake Wheeler on his stick. And those passing lanes that seem to be open more often than not all of a sudden aren't. And I just don't see a lot of creativity happening or improvisation, I guess. And that's why I think the second unit, guys, has been a little more effective as of late, because they maybe don't stick to the script the same way that top unit does. They're a little more of a wild card, and as a result, they maybe have more of a shoot-first mentality, whereas the top unit is always looking for that perfect play. You know, I think with Dustin Byfuglien back, we obviously haven't seen his impact yet since he's returned. At least physically, we've seen a bit of an impact a couple games ago especially, but on the power play, I just think the Jets have to almost get back to basics. They're a little too, they're not moving around nearly as much. I think Kyle Connell needs to do a better job down low. Patrick Laine, you know, who looks like he's probably back on that unit now, the other day, he's going to get back, and I'm not a huge fan of him in the slot and Scheifele in the old Laine spot. If it were up to me, I'd go back to the drawing board and kind of how you were running it when it was so successful and hope that they can rediscover the magic. But certainly, it's become more of a hindrance than a weapon, hasn't it, guys? 0-17 the last six games, and I guess to add insult to injury, it even gave up a shorty the other day, which was very costly. That could have been a 2-2 game. Instead, it's a 3-1 game and kind of a dagger for the Jets.
Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Senators later on this evening. Mike, if you subscribe to an analytical point of view regarding how hockey teams should be evaluated, the Winnipeg Jets are way more average than they are, you know, according to the NHL standings.
Right.
Now, we know that the NHL standings ultimately are really what only what matters when you enter the playoffs. But what do you say for those, to those who say that the Jets are really playing above the numbers they should be putting up if you just look at their raw analytical numbers?
Yeah, I mean, the numbers, as the saying goes, typically don't lie, right? But, you know, I think the Jets, they have a style of play which maybe doesn't always lend itself to putting up sort of good analytics. I mean, one of the things the Jets do a lot is they are willing to give up a lot of shots. But it's where, I guess, those shots are from that maybe separates them from the Ottawas, who tend to give up a lot of shots as well. I mean, the Jets, they'll give you those outside shots, those perimeter shots, but they do try and limit the high danger chances. And I know Paul Maurice has talked about that, that they feel that they do a pretty good job of limiting some of those really great A scoring chances. And for sure, I mean, good goaltending can mask some issues, right? And I think the Jets have had, for the most part this season, very good goaltending. Lauren Brossoit, especially, other than his last start in Ottawa last weekend. And Connor Hellebuyck, especially lately, has been tremendous. So you get good goaltending. You get pretty good special teams, which the Jets have had, other than this recent run where the power play's gone cold. And, I mean, those sorts of things can help you overcome maybe some other deficiencies in your game. So, you know, I think all of which underscores, guys, when it comes to the trade deadline, why the Jets should not be standing pat. This is by no means a complete team that you can look at and say, wow, they've got everything they need to go the distance here. You know, I think even if other teams in the race weren't trying to load up, as I expect other contenders will do, I think the Jets would still be wise to try and add, and that's why I think they are going to be very busy. They have to see these numbers that we can all see, both the analytics and just the eye test alone that tells you these Jets could use, they could use some more horses in this race. And so, you know, we talked earlier about a defenseman who I think should be on the radar, and I absolutely think more depth at forward, and that's why I think a player like Mark Stone, who brings it all, I mean, he's got the offensive ability, but my goodness, is he ever a tremendous two-way player, and I saw that up close in Ottawa last week. Fans who are at Bell MTS should get to see it again tonight. The guy always seems to be in the right place. He's got the good stick, and, you know, to me, he's a great fit. It's just, what is the price? That's the big question.
Mike, one final question for you here, and it's a two-part question. How surprised were you to hear that Nikolaj Ehlers' return was going to be delayed a week? Your colleague Jason Bell at the Winnipeg Free Press, he broke that story. You know, we thought there was a chance maybe even that Ehlers was going to play tonight against Ottawa.
Yeah.
At the very least, we thought it was realistic that he was going to play in that road game against the Colorado Avalanche next week, and then we hear that, you know, he's going to be out for a couple more weeks. So first part of the question, how surprised were you? And the second part is, how badly does this Jets team miss Ehlers? Because when you talk about, you know, the Jets could use some more horses in this race, it seems like Ehlers might be the greatest trade deadline acquisition that could come from within.
Sure. Well, let me start with the second one, and I'll break it down even further. How much does Patrick Laine miss Nikolaj Ehlers? Mm-hmm. Maybe not just so much having him as a line mate, although you could argue that they have had some chemistry in the past. But Patrick Laine, of course, has gone ice cold since his good back went out of the lineup. And I don't know that might not be a coincidence. I think Nikolaj Ehlers can make others around him better, and that probably includes Patrick Laine. So, for sure, I mean, you look at the Jets, even in this recent run here, they're not, I mean, take away the 9 goals they scored against Anaheim. They've had some games here where it seems like scoring has been a bit of a struggle, and a big part of that is because the power play is not contributing. So, for sure, the Jets miss Nikolaj Ehlers, I think, in a big, big way. And, yeah, I mean, I think surprise is the word. I saw him, he was on the road trip last weekend, And he was certainly skating. Now, it's an upper body injury. I believe it's his wrist or his hand in that area. But the way he was moving around the ice, I mean, in a couple of those skates out east last weekend, I thought, well, this guy's ready. He's going to be in the lineup by Tuesday. And then, of course, we heard that, you know, Tuesday wasn't an option and Thursday wasn't an option, but Saturday certainly was. And then he has had a doctor's visit, and I just believe whatever his injury is, I guess the healing that they thought had happened maybe hasn't fully happened. I don't know so much, guys, that it's that he couldn't step in and play. I think there's just a concern that if he did now, there's still a risk of a quick sort of re-injury, and I guess that's the risk you don't want to take. I'll say this, though, if the Jets are still in the playoffs tomorrow, I have a strong feeling Nikolaj Ehlers will be in the lineup. I think this is a trend we're seeing with the Jets this year where they almost are being overly cautious with injuries and not rushing guys back in. And I guess it's a luxury you can have when you feel like you have some significant depth on your team. One thing the Ehlers extension does do, though, is it delays the decision, doesn't it, on who's coming out for him when he does get back into the lineup. And it's interesting because now when he comes back, it's probably going to be after the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. There may be now a couple lineup decisions at forward that have to be made with Ehlers and whatever they add at the deadline. And won't that be interesting to see how it plays out?
It absolutely will. When the music stops, where does everybody land in the game of musical chairs? Mike McIntyre covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. Mike, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, maybe they'll try and dress 14 forwards, guys. Thanks a lot.
Take care, Mike. Thanks again. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. A lot of good commentary coming in via Twitter. We encourage you to keep it up. At Illegal Curve is the best way to do it. Still coming up to join us in about 5 to 7 minutes' time, we're going to be joined by Ian Mendez from TSN Radio Ottawa to talk about the Senators ahead of the rematch tonight at Bell MTS Place between the Jets and the Sens. Everybody is hyped up on Mark Stone and the possibility that he's going to be a member of the Winnipeg Jets.
And probably worth noting for Jets fans for tonight's game, it's always fun to speculate, but we got to focus on hockey sometimes. And looks like Lauren Brossoit is going to be your starter in net for the Winnipeg Jets. And right now, Sammy Niku is paired up with Ben Chiarot, so we don't know if Dustin Byfuglien is simply maintenance or, you know, when he got tangled with Miko Rantanen, and even though he finished the game, is there more to it? So Paul Maurice will speak probably very soon, and we'll have that info for you shortly.
Yes, exactly right. So that is, what do you think about that? Brossoit getting the redemption start against the Senators after last week?
It makes a lot of sense, right? Because Paul Maurice earlier this week said that Brossoit was going to get one of these three games,
mm-hmm.
right? So Hellebuck got the first two, and it's nice for Lauren Brossoit.
It gives Hellebuck a good week off,
and
in
that was
games.
Brossoit's maybe his only bad game of the year so far.
I would agree.
So
with that.
You know, it's nice for him to have that redemption.
And not only that, and we've talked about it, and as he brought this point up, I want to say about a month ago, but the fact is you don't need Connor Hellebuck playing as much as he is. You want Connor Hellebuck to be fresh for the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And look, you talk to goalies, I talk to them, like whenever you talk to goalies, they want to play every game. We know that. They're going to always say that. But the fact of the matter is they are not the ones making the decisions.
The Marty Brodeur, Grant Fuhr, 75 games a year, those days are over.
Right. Yeah, certainly. Some comments, like I mentioned, coming in via Twitter. Man of Spiel says the NHL Jets, are not going to get stoned for a first-round pick in Patan. It's going to cost three pieces to acquire Mark Stone. The Jets have diminished Patan's value by not playing him this season, either for the NHL club or for the Moose. We know he probably wouldn't clear waivers to go to the Moose, so that sort of took that off the board. But there's probably an argument to be said for the fact that the guy has been sitting in the press box and has played, what, two games in the last, I don't know, it seems like 4 months, something like that.
And taking about five warm-ups.
Yeah, so it was, you know, an interesting, valid comment there. Brian Harder asks, if Vegas trades for Stone, do the Jets react to that by trading for Duchesne? Would the Jets go hard for Duchesne, or would they try and obtain a lesser-known pending free agent?
Well, it's possible. I mean, we're not privy to the Jets management and pro-scouting meetings, right? I mean, Mark Stone makes a lot of sense. I think Matt Duchene makes a lot of sense. I mean, I personally have said on the record I like Mark Stone for this Jets team, and you can listen to the first part of the podcast when it comes out why that is. I mean, I don't necessarily need to repeat myself here, but you know, Matt Duchene's a talented player. I just think Mark Stone makes the Jets a better team. I don't know if Matt Duchene makes the Jets a better team, to be honest with you. Skilled player. He's got lots of skill, but I that's just me. And, you know, maybe you guys disagree with that. I know Mike McIntyre agrees with me. He likes Mark Stone better for the Jets. In terms of what you're going to give up, it goes back to what we were talking about, guys, a couple of segments ago, right? What are you going to give up to get Mark Stone if he's a rental? And if he's not a rental, what salary are you moving out?
Yeah.
Because when you're talking about Lyon and Connor, guys, and we're going to talk about this, you know, more towards the summer, but
sure.
Lyon and Connor are getting big pay raises, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you've also got Trouba,
yeah.
who's coming up. So, you know, how does Trouba factor in? Does he factor in? Or are you going to trade Trouba? And that's something that hasn't been talked about a lot as well. Is Trouba in play here? I don't think he is at all.
I don't think he is right now. But
if the Jets are going to go after a bigger name, and, you know, it's not – by bigger name, I don't mean Artemi Panarin. I don't think Artemi Panarin is coming to Winnipeg.
There's no oceans in Winnipeg.
When you're talking about – we talked about it last year. Paul Stastny was not the guy everybody was talking about. Who was everybody talking about last year? It was Derek Brassard, right?
Sure.
So it could be a name – there could be a name out there that's not a pending UFA, that's not Mark Stone, Matt Duchene, or Kevin Hayes. That could be a target for the Jets right now.
And that
it's
goes
possible.
And that kind of goes back to my whole idea, right, of misdirection. I mean, again, you get involved in the chatter, and we saw, look, I mean, I was in the press box last night. There's lots of activity. There's lots of general managers. There's assistant general managers. There's tons of scouts. I mean,
we know the Senators brass has been in town.
Yeah,
I think they now live here, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, no, they were there. And so I think it's more a function of you've got a lot of people there, but you've got a lot of moving parts, right? So, you know, are people there because they want to make trades? Are they there because they want to hear the scuttlebutt? Are they there because they want to, you know, again, drive up pricing? Because, you know, sometimes it's not necessarily what you acquire. Because as you just said, you're going to get Nikolaj Ehlers back. That's like getting a top six winger back for no trade. So you're getting Nikolaj Ehlers back. Maybe you're just trying to drive up the price of a Mark Stone to hurt your opponent. So to me, that's something that is perhaps in the back of the mind of folks. But you know, we never know, of course, what's going on because, as Ez just touched on, we're not privy to the inner workings of what's going on in the organization.
You know, I think it'll be interesting if the Jets do get a winger. So they're at that point in time, assuming that they don't take anybody off their active roster, you're loaded on your wings.
Mm-hmm.
You're loaded really from the first line all the way through the fourth line on your wings. Do you have that playmaking centerman as a third-line center to complement those wingers? I mean, right now, Adam Lowry is obviously your third-line centerman, and nobody would consider him, I would say, a dynamic playmaker. So are you going to be playing some skilled players with a guy who's more of a, let's say, a rugged player than pure skill? I mean, it's going to be it's a very interesting conundrum that the Jets are facing here.
Well, that's why I think Paul Maurice likes Matty Perreault on that line. Matty Perreault's a skilled player.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so when you're talking about, you know, are they going to play skilled players with Adam Lowry? Like Brandon Tanev's got 12 goals, and everybody, you know, characterizes Brandon Tanev as a grinder, right? Well, I mean, he's a grinder that has 12 goals.
But
and I love everybody likes to say that these guys aren't skilled guys. Casey Cizikas on the Islanders, one of my favorite players, you know that he's got 15 goals. He's a fourth-line guy with 15 goals. So all I'm saying is, you know, the Jets, everybody wants skill, right? But when you're talking about the Jets' third line, it's a skill line.
Could you see – I mean, right now it's Lowry and Kopp as your third and fourth-line centermen. Could you see TLC reunited as your – quote-unquote fourth line,
you could see
and then
that.
Somebody else who isn't right now a centerman playing in that centerman role.
Could be Jack Roslovic. I mean, he's done better on the wing, but you always do have the option of Jack Roslovic, but you also have the option of moving Brian Little to the wing if you acquire another center.
Well, that's what they did last year. I mean, Little played a lot of wing towards the end of the season
year. If you want to keep talking about, you know, the, you know, possible targets for the Jets, I would rather have Kevin Hayes than Matt Duchene, personally.
Okay, hold that thought. We'll come back to it after Ian Mendez of TSN Radio in Ottawa. He's going to join us next to talk about the Senators, but we can address that comment and much more later on during the show. Very busy Saturday morning here. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. A lot of great action coming in via Twitter. Keep it going at Illegal Curve. We'll get back to that throughout the course of the program. And of course, our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio, is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TSN Radio in Ottawa, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Ian Mendez. Ian, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, guys. My pleasure. Do we have something to talk about, or what's going on?
Yeah, you know, just a couple things to talk about. No hype, no attention at all to this tonight's Jets-Senators game. We certainly haven't spent the last hour talking about Mark Stone. That would just be you know, crazy talk.
Ian, we're hoping that you can actually just officially announce the trade of Mark Stone to Winnipeg for us.
Oh, man. You'd be printing those 61 Jets jerseys pretty quickly. Hey, guys. Actually, what's today? The 16th? 17th? Whatever it is? 17th?
16th.
16th. In my wildest dreams, guys, my wildest dreams, I never thought I'd be chatting with you guys and chatting with anybody on the 16th of February, and the Ottawa Senators had not had any resolution on any of their big three UFAs. This is utterly mind-boggling to me that we would get to this point, that we would be having this conversation, that Mark Stone and Matt Duchene and Ryan DeZingle could all play tonight, could all get hurt tonight. I don't even know what to say. And the fact that they're in Ottawa tonight, it's almost like the hockey gods, or sorry, they're in Winnipeg tonight, it's almost like the hockey gods are playing like a cruel prank on all of us back here in Ottawa. Like, it's just ramping up the trade speculation with Pierre Dorion and Kevin Cheveldayoff. And I don't even know, guys, and we've spent, I do a four-hour talk show here every day, so we're talking about 20 hours a week for, I don't know how many weeks we've done this. I don't even know what to say. Like, I really don't know what to say at this stage of the game.
You know, to that point, Ian, are the Senators potentially playing with a little bit of fire, keeping these guys in their lineup? I mean, you're, like I said, you're 9 days away. You obviously don't want to sit guys for the next 9 days, but no resolution, no contract extensions, no trades right now. I mean, injuries happen. Is that, you know, a back-of-mind concern for the Senators' brass?
Oh, my God. Playing with fire. Like, to me, guys, they're dumping kerosene and gasoline and, you know, everything all over the situation, and it's like they keep flicking the light on. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, I don't know. And we are really in unprecedented territory because I don't think in the history of kind of the UFA era of the NHL, and even if we just go to the cap era, we have never had a team with not one, not two, but three potential UFA assets of this caliber all sitting there less than 10 days before the deadline, and there's no resolution on any of them, and you're going to play them all? Like, and you guys in Winnipeg would probably remember this only because Mark Stone is a local guy, but, I mean, Dustin Byfuglien tagged him pretty good couple of years ago with a, you know, it was a clean hit, but hey, Mark Stone got seriously injured on that hit. Can you imagine tonight if something similar happens to one of those three guys? And like, I guess my question would be, like, what's your end game? Like, or what's the upside of Stone, Duchene, and DeZingle playing tonight at the MTS Center? Like, oh, because you somehow you beat the Jets again? Well, great, you're still in 31st. Like, I to me, you're in a risk reward situation, and the risk of them playing greatly outweighs the reward of whatever they could bring to the table tonight. Sit them out. Like, people in Ottawa aren't going to be mad at you that you sat these guys out until you had some clarification. Like, people are going to be livid if they get hurt and you mitigate their trade value. But I can tell you, look, it's already an angry fan base here. Don't further agitate them by putting guys in harm's way and potentially, like I said, mitigating your trade return if one, two, or maybe even all three of them get hurt.
Ian, we'll tell Buff not to touch Mark Stone or Matt Duchene tonight for you. We'll just make sure that he, you know, maybe engages some other players. But, you know, I went back and I listened, Ian, to pregame on Thursday night before the the Senators Red Wings game, you were talking to Bob McKenzie, and I went back and I listened to that interview, and you mentioned that, you know, there wasn't much to talk about, and then you asked Bob, you know, to provide, you know, some update on what was happening with Matt Duchene, Mark Stone, and Ryan Dzingel, and he mentioned that, you know, the Senators and Pierre Dorion, as you mentioned, are still potentially negotiating on new contracts. And, you know, when you talk about these three players, clearly Mark Stone is having a career year, and, you know, Matt Duchene, they gave up the first-round pick to get him. But how realistic is it that any of these players are going to sign long-term? Do you think Ryan Dzingel is most likely to be the guy that the Senators keep? When it comes to Duchene and Stone, how likely is it that we're going to see this long-term contract signed in the next, you know, week to 9 days?
Yeah, like, well, and that's just it, right? Like, and I went back and I looked this up, because I wrote a piece for TSN.ca about maybe 6-7 weeks ago, when I thought, okay, we're in a really weird spot. Like, how many guys in the last few years have signed a max deal? So I'm talking about 7 or 8 year deal. You re-sign with your team after December the 1st, but before the trade deadline. And you know what the answer is, guys? One. One guy did it, was Anze Kopitar back in 2016, re-upped for 8 years with the LA Kings. Everybody else that signed an 8-year contract extension either did it in the summertime or early in the fall. That's it. So you're telling me the Ottawa Senators are going to completely change recent history here, and one guy has signed an 8-year deal in the last 5 years, and now magically multiple guys on the same team are going to do it? No, it's not going to happen. We've reached a point where all signs tell you that they're likely going to be traded. That's just my gut telling me that that's what's going to happen. I think Stone, I'll use Stone as the example. When they couldn't get Mark Stone signed to a contract extension in the summer, and they were going to go to arbitration, and they just agreed to a 1-year deal at, you know, $7 million and change, to me, that was an awful sign. I thought, this is the worst case scenario for Ottawa. You had an opportunity to lock up Mark Stone a year out of free agency, and he either didn't want to or you weren't willing to pony up. To me, that was the point to get something done. Not now, not February the 16th, when you're, you know, a dozen days before the trade deadline. The point to me, we're almost past the point where you could have or should have signed these guys. That should have been done a long time ago. Like, what are you possibly haggling over? Like, $20,000, $50,000, $100,000? Like, this can't be about money. It absolutely cannot be about money. It has to be about the direction of the team, the direction of the organization, or something that's not quite sitting right with the players here.
You know, and Ian, 9 days ago you wrote about the Sens' rebuild plan is public, but will Stone and Duchene buy in? The question I have, and you talked about it a little bit with Drew in your first answer about riling up the fan base. How is the fan base handling this, especially because, like you said, there is so much uncertainty?
They're not doing well. And, you know, it's funny because I think a lot of fans last year were like, well, okay, if they trade Carlson, I'm out. And now I'm going to say, well, if they trade Stone, I'm out. Well, how many times can you hurt a singular fan base with the it just feels like they've become the Montreal Expos of the NHL, where you have this great amount of talent, but you can't retain them either for financial reasons or reasons that are inexplicable. But you go back, you want to, depending on how far back you guys want to draw the line, but, you know, you think of Daniel Alfredson, Jason Spezza, Danny Heatley, Alexei Yashin, Dano Chara, Marian Hossa, you know, Eric Carlson, Kyle Turris, and now we're talking about potentially Mark Stone, Matt Duchene. I mean, these are, in some cases, Hall of Fame players. At worst, they're perennial all-stars, and they've all left under kind of weird, murky circumstances. I mean, at some point as a fan base, you say, enough's enough. And I thought enough was enough at Eric Carlson, and obviously these fans are, you know, they're pretty resilient. And Stone is the one that it feels like he was homegrown here in the sense that they drafted him late, they developed him, they gave him the opportunity to be a star. If he walks away from this, he's walking away from the team that gave him a chance. And what does that say if you're a Senators fan? I think a lot of Ottawa fans really felt like, you know, if this rebuild was good enough for Mark Stone, it's good enough for me. And I think the prevailing thought is, if he walks out the door, hey, I'm going to be right behind Mark Stone.
Ian Mendez is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Senators tonight at Bell MTS Place. Ian, if you were starting a hockey team, most players would say, or most general managers would say, it starts up the middle and with a centerman. But if you were starting a hockey team, would you choose Mark Stone or Matt Duchene?
Yeah, and you're right. This is kind of, my answer is going to sound kind of counterintuitive, But I think I would take Mark Stone. And the reason why is, if you go back through the years here in Ottawa, whoever he's played with has absolutely elevated their games. And usually you don't think of a winger that way, right? You think of a centerman as the one who either drives possession or is a playmaker and makes things, players around him better. For whatever reason, Stone is able to do that from the right side of the ice. And his ability to see the ice, make people better. He made Zach Smith a 25-goal scorer. J.G. Pageau had his best offensive season with him. Brady Kachuk and Colin White, when they were all together, were having, like, Mark Stone makes everybody better. And that's not to say that Matt Duchene hasn't made Ryan Dezingle a pretty good player, and Matt Duchene isn't a world-class player on his own. He is. Matt Duchene, to me, is a, can be a legitimate number one centerman on a lot of teams in the league. But Mark Stone has this sort of understated ability, and it's in Ottawa for a long time. We felt like he was the best kept secret in the NHL. Like, people didn't quite realize how good he is, and well, I think people realize how good he is now. And so, I would, if I was starting a team, I would take him. He just has all of the intangibles on top of the stuff I mentioned on the ice. He just has that sort of built-in, and I called it a moral compass earlier this week, where, like, you just trust this guy. Like, he's just, he's a good, like, he's a good human being. And he just knows what the right thing to do is. And I think that's why a lot of people feel like, you know, if Mark Stone's moral compass is kind of pointing him away from Ottawa, what does that say about the state of the organization? So I would absolutely, in a weird way, probably one of the only times I would take a winger over a centerman if I was starting a team right now.
Ian, how much interest do you think there's going to be in Cody Ceci? He seems to be that fourth senator who's a pending free agent. He's a restricted free agent as opposed to being an unrestricted free agent like Mark Stone and Matt Duchene. But is there going to be a lot of interest in Cody Ceci? Do you think the Leafs have been a team that have been rumored to potentially be interested in Ceci? Do you think it's going to be tough for Pierre Dorion to move him? Because obviously he's a player that doesn't look like that he's going to factor in long-term here.
Yeah, like in normal circumstances, guys, I would say, yeah, Cody Ceci for sure they're going to move him, and all signs point to that. But we just talked about Pierre Dorion as bigger fish to fry. Like, he's got three things, in my opinion, that are on his agenda that are far greater importance in terms of the timeline in Duchene, Stone, and Dezingle than Cody Ceci. But this could be your best chance to move Cody Ceci. And, you know, you go through it, I think, and I apologize because I don't know who your quote-unquote whipping boy is right now in Winnipeg, but you go through in Canada, every Canadian market has the one whipping boy, right? Like, the one, and it's usually a defenseman, and it's like the guy that you're like, oh my God, we got to trade this guy. In Vancouver, it's Eric Branson. In Toronto, it's Jake Gardner. Well, in Ottawa, it's Cody Ceci. And it has gotten to the point where it is utterly toxic for Cody Ceci. And I actually feel bad for the guy. He can do no right in the eyes of the fan base here. And it's really sad because he's from here. He grew up here. He loves living in this city and loves his family. It's gotten to the point where he needs to get out. And I don't say that because I think he's a terrible defenseman. I actually think he can play in this league, but I don't think he can thrive anymore in this environment. It's gotten too nasty, too personal, too toxic. So I would think that your best chance is, yeah, why wouldn't you trade him to a Toronto or a, you know, whoever might need a right-hand shooting defenseman? Because he's an RFA, theoretically, Toronto or whoever trades him could potentially get two playoff runs out of him before he's a UFA in 2020. So I know they talked about, well, maybe that's a move you make in the draft. There's no push to move him now because you still have leverage on him in the summer. But I just think, listen, if you're going to clear house or clean house now. Do it all. Like, don't trade two guys now and another. Like, just get it all done with, and let's talk about how we can move forward with a group starting in the summertime.
Ian Mendez covers the Ottawa Senators for TSN Radio in Ottawa. Ian, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us. It'll be a fascinating next 9 days in the nation's capital.
You bet. Who said Ottawa is a boring town?
Certainly not us. Thanks, Ian.
Yeah, anytime. My pleasure.
When we come back, latest from the Winnipeg Jets game day skate ahead of tonight's contest against the Senators. We talk about the Jets' fourth line. We talk more about the NHL trade deadline. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Popping ahead, man, pass on the far side for Appleton. Streaking down the lane. Cut in front. Trying to get it for Kopp. Let a shot go. He scores! Andrew Kopp scores in his second straight game. Winnipeg has regained the lead. It's 4-3 for the Jets. How about that?
Well, that was from Tuesday night's Jets victory over the New York Rangers. Andrew Kopp providing the game-winning goal. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Senators, 6 o'clock tonight at Bell MTS Place. The game you can hear, of course, live on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Hearing a lot of chatter as of late that the Jets' fourth line...
We should mention that Sammy Niku looks like he'll be paired with Ben Chiarot tonight. So, I mean, again...
Nothing confirmed yet.
Nothing confirmed but from Coach Maurice yet, but it looks like whatever that Mikko Rantanen, I'm assuming, situation happened in the second period of the Colorado game on Thursday night... Maybe triggered something with Dustin Byfuglien because he is not he didn't take skate. Sammy Niku was paired with Ben Chiarot, and then Ben Chiarot confirmed to Scott Billick that he'll be partnered with Sammy Niku today against the Senators.
So nothing yet confirmed, but likely that Dustin Byfuglien out of the lineup for the Jets tonight. But when that is confirmed, we'll let you know here on this fine program. What I was going to say, and thank you, Dave, for interrupting me there. That I meant to give that update is that hearing a lot of chat that the Jets' fourth line, Kopp, Lemieux and Appleton is playing too well to break up that line for a playoff run or come playoff time. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, that line seems to be making an impact on occasion, but are they playing too well, quote unquote, to break up?
Well, yeah, and I understand what the question is. I don't think you can ever have a line that's playing too well. I mean, that's a good problem to have, right?
Sure.
When your fourth line is playing that well. And Andrew Kopp is arguably playing his best hockey of his career. And Drew, I've always been a big fan of Andrew Kopp's game. And a lot of people, seem to criticize a guy like Kopp and say that, he doesn't have, as high of an offensive upside. But if you look at Andrew Kopp, and, it's hard to believe, Dave, but this is Kopp's fourth year in the NHL now. Mm-hmm. And Kopp was a later draft pick. But he's a guy that, for me, seems to improve every single year. He can play center, as you mentioned, Drew. He can play wing. He's a guy that can be put out there on the penalty kill. He's not going to be on the second power play unit or anything like that, but just such a reliable player for Paul Maurice. But getting back to the fourth line with Brendan Lemieux and Mason Appleton, mm-hmm. I mean, this line has been really good, guys. This line has created offense for Paul Maurice now for, I would say, 2 weeks, maybe even 3 weeks, since it was put together. And the Jets have not had a lot of stability on the fourth line, right? I mean, you're talking about guys like Christian Vesalainen have been on that fourth line. Jack Roslovic's been on that fourth line. So this is probably the best fourth line the Jets have had this year. And it's not necessarily a fourth line that you would expect because we expected Mason Appleton to spend the majority of the season in the American Hockey League. Now, when Nikolaj Ehlers comes back, there is going to be some shuffling of the chairs, right? I mean, there just has to be. One of these players is going to come out. Now, if you're going to ask me, who that player is going to be, the most likely player to come out is going to be one of Brendan Lemieux or Mason Appleton, just because there are other players ahead of them as far as seniority and as far as skill go, right? It's not going to be Andrew Kopp. I don't think Andrew Kopp's going to come out of the lineup when Nikolaj Ehlers comes back. So, that player is now going to become the 13th forward, and then, Nick Petan or whoever the Jets have at that point is going to be the 14th forward. So, in some ways, I think it's a question that's irrelevant because if it's too good to keep together, I mean, how do you keep it together when one of those players is going to have to come out of the lineup? It's going to happen, Drew, because you're not going to take out anybody else on one of the top two lines. So when Ehlers comes back, it's not going to be Matty Perreault. I mean, Matty Perreault's been so good on that third line. So, yes, I mean, ideally you'd like to keep the line together, but when you're talking about other skilled players in the Jets lineup, unfortunately, there are only 12 forward spots, right? So there's 14 forwards and you've got 12 forward spots. So it's going to be Brendan Lemieux or Mason Appleton that comes out. If the Jets are healthy, Ehlers comes back, all things being equal, I mean, unfortunately, one of those guys is going to have to come out of the lineup.
Well, I went back for the last 10 games, and I looked at the numbers, and I looked at their Corsi 4 percentage for that line, 5-on-5, save, yep, save and venue adjusted. And what numbers are, what the numbers jump out at clearly
Talk fancy
say,
stats to me, Drew, all day long.
Okay, well, I'll do it, baby. You know, what jumps out at, to me
okay,
clearly.
This got weird.
Is that this line is effective against lesser competition, but when they play against quality competition, by which I mean playoff teams, they're getting absolutely, they can't hold up in terms of possession numbers.
So I have a question. So then, wasn't the premise of your question somewhat flawed?
Yes.
Okay.
It was
just
sort
to,
of.
Just wanted to make sure.
It was designed
that.
To create conversation.
Well, Dave Drew is flawed in general.
I mean, so. I provided you with the information. So
I'm
I mean,
aware.
It's not like, you know, if you looked at the information, you could see where I was going with the conversation.
No, Dave and I need a graph.
Okay. Well, there is a graph. There's literally a chart in your show plan that presents this information to you.
It better be a pie chart.
It's not a pie chart. It's an Excel table.
There's a pie chart as you would eat it.
I know. You go back and you look at them against Boston, 22.99% Corsi 4. Against Columbus, 32.19% Corsi mm-hmm. 4. Now, those are two games the Jets end up winning.
It's a very small sample size, Drew.
Well, but you look at it, the 10 games, and there's a mix of, there's, you know, four games there against really what I'll call quality opposition, mm-hmm. and there's six games there against what I'll call lesser competition, and it's clear they're beating up on the lesser competition, but against the quality competition, their numbers are suffering. So to me, that says that...
Well, I mean, then the answer to your question clearly is the fact that then you can't afford to break them up, because
right.
the truth is that when the... And as he said, I mean, the reality is when Nikolaj Ehlers comes back, I don't care how good that fourth line is playing, one of those guys is coming out, because Nikolaj Ehlers is your top six or top nine winger, and so you're gonna have everybody correspondingly move down, and as a result, Mason Appleton and Brendan Lemieux are coming out of the lineup. It's as simple as that.
I think it makes the most sense, guys, to have Jack Roslovic back on the fourth line, and I realize that ideally you'd want Jack Roslovic playing more than 7, 8, 9 minutes a game. But to me, that's what makes the most sense.
Well, to that
what
point,
what makes the most sense is you take one of Mason Appleton or Brendan Lemieux out of the lineup, and Jack Roslovic goes on your fourth line, and Andrew Kopp remains center, and yeah. you keep Matty Perreault on that third line. I really, you know, and this just might be me, but you know, for me, the TLP line is just as effective as the TLC line.
Well, the TLP line has been very good for the Winnipeg Jets since they were united. But, I mean, it goes back to what we've been talking about for the most of the last 90 minutes. You know, what happens to that line if the Jets acquire a winger? When Ehlers comes back, does TLC get reunited, not the band, the line? Do Tanev, Lowry, and Kopp get reunited as the Jets, you know, probably a possession-driving fourth line? Because if you look at the Jets' numbers, and I asked this question to Mike McIntyre in the first hour, the Jets' possession numbers this year are a lot worse than they were last season. The Jets are an average possession team right now.
I think Nikolaj Ehlers' injury has a lot to do with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, let's be real. He obviously drives possession.
Yeah, there's no question about it. But I mean,
I think not having Buff in the lineup also has something to do with that.
No question. They would say that the Jets' defense right now, with the exception of Bufflin, is not doing a great job of getting the puck out of the zone. They're not doing a great job
There was an article about that yesterday.
Yeah, it's available on illegalcurve.com.
I just want to say a little site called illegalcurve.com.
There you go. Cheap plug number one for the day. But, you know, there's something to be said for it. I mean, the numbers there are, it is probably a factor that the Winnipeg Jets are succeeding despite not having the same dominant possession numbers that they, you know, that they had for the majority of the year last year. And I wonder if Ehlers returning, I would assume Ehlers returning, an addition to the forward group, maybe something on the back end, but who knows at that point in time. And then, you know, Tanev, Lowry, and Kopp being reunited is going to maybe flip those numbers for the next 6 weeks of the regular season or 5 weeks of the regular season heading into the playoffs.
Well, Perreault, Lowry, and Tanev has been a good possession line.
Absolutely.
Right? So, I mean, my whole...
And everybody who plays with Perreault is a possession driver. That's what they've been saying about
right.
him for a long time.
Right, absolutely. So, you know, again, just me. I mean, I'm not the one who makes these decisions. It's Paul Maurice.
Yes.
And Paul Maurice obviously is keeping that line together for a reason, because he also likes Kopp, Lemieux, and Appleton. But, you know, everything is up in the air. There's a lot of balls in the air right now because, as you mentioned, the Jets could acquire a center or a winger. And then we're having a whole different conversation a week or a week and a half from now, right, Drew?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you're asking me about that fourth line, I mean, I would love to see that fourth line stay together. Is it the best fourth line in the NHL? I don't think it's the best fourth line, but Lemieux, Kopp, and Appleton have clicked. And I mentioned it. I think Andrew Kopp is playing the best hockey of the year, maybe his career right now. I mean, he's really turned into a very valuable fourth line center. And yes, could you possibly have other players on that fourth line? Yes. Brendan Lemieux, guys, I think, too, in my opinion, is the most improved Jet this year, because he was really struggling with taking penalties and all of that.
Oh,
and
since the Finland trip, he's sure, the most improved Jet.
Right, and he's really turned into another valuable winger on that fourth line, right? He mucks it up, he goes to the net, he's actually been scoring some goals this year at the NHL level. So, you know, maybe Brendan Lemieux or Mason Appleton goes back to the Manitoba Moose when Nikolai Ehlers comes back, or maybe they stay up with the Jets as a 13th forward. It's tough to say right now, because you might have other pieces coming in, but I think this is all a good thing for Paul Maurice. I think the key thing, though, is getting that second line going. That's the line that you have to get going. It's not the fourth line, it's not the third line, it's not the first line. The second line is the line where you need to see more production right now.
It's a fascinating game of chess that the Jets are trying to play right now, 9 days ahead of the NHL trade deadline. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Marty Biron to look around goaltending, talk about the league in general. You're listening to Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets Game Day. We're the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.